Welcome to We Mentor Mondays podcast with Nancy. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery. Learn something new from our stories today. Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy. Today in the studio, I have with us Mike Barrett. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Nancy.
Mike is a certified public accountant and partner at Mosnick, Bauer & Associates, a firm that was founded by Larry Mosnick in 1971. So welcome to our program.
Hey, it's nice to be here.
Oh, good. I'm glad you're here. Well, like everybody, we always get right to the feelings. We like to know what's going on in your life, what you're internally experiencing as you're sitting here behind the mic. And so I was wondering if you could check in with us.
Well, I can try. To be honest, I probably don't talk about my feelings with anyone. You know, probably even my wife or mother.
Wow, really?
Kind of more of a private person that way. But for you, Nancy,
I'll do it. Yep. Oh, thank you. Okay. So, how are you feeling?
Well, I mean, a little bit nervous, a little curious as to what your podcast, sessions are about.
Sure.
I guess also maybe a little vulnerable, like you might ask me a question about my emotions or something like that.
Yeah, and then put you out there. Yeah.
But also, I guess, I'm feeling happy and... willing to provide some information for your listeners.
Great. And our listeners are excited to hear from you too. You've got a lot to share. You've been in business a long time, since 1991.
Yep, it is a long time. Yeah, 25 years. Hard to believe it's been that long, but time just keeps marching on.
That's right. So thank you for taking the risk and sharing how you're feeling. I notice with myself that when I share what I'm experiencing, my feelings, sometimes with people that I care about, that I actually feel relieved, especially if I'm feeling a little bit stressed or intense or, things you forget to talk about your feelings. We're used to acting them out in funny ways.
Yep. I can see that. I mean, I think I can get kind of bottled up and can build up if you don't... somehow release it or maybe ask someone to help you understand what's going on or.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause we're all full of a lot of emotions. I mean, I've been doing this self-awareness mentoring journal. I started it when I started my business in 1992. I wanted a tool that could help people to kind of track their own emotional self. And so that they could see over a period of time how they were feeling and seeing if there's some patterns or if they're always feeling depressed or sad or, because it gives them then a way for them to access their emotions and think about them and do something with them. And it also has always created a really honest, authentic place where we can have a good conversation.
Yep, I can see that. And your emotions can really change, certainly from day to day, from minute to minute, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. One phone call, right?
Yes.
Or a text message or email, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that we talk about like 1991. Earlier, I was saying on August 23rd, we celebrated the 25th birthday of the World Wide Web. It was on that day in 1991, for the first time, new users were able to access the World Wide Web. So this birthday was not met with much pomp and circumstance. Did you hear about it?
No, I hadn't.
Yeah, I heard about it through my yoga teacher.
Wow.
Yeah, she was talking about how our attention span has diminished over the years.
Yeah, like, there's no doubt, right?
Right. I mean, we're constantly interrupted. with different emails, texts. I mean, even driving, I just find myself having to use some self-compassion techniques, using, you know, if I'm at a stoplight and it turns green and somebody is not going because I can see they're on their phone, you know, I have to use a little self-talk, you know, okay, Nance, just relax, don't go right for the horn. But it's such an impulsive thing. I, you know, I have to really focus on it because I want to just honk my horn.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah. So anyway, the World Wide Web birthday, it was designed and deployed, just for those listeners who like more details, by computer scientist Tim Berners-Lee in Switzerland, not Al Gore, as our prior vice president. Do you remember that? When he came out and said that he invented the World Wide Web.
Yeah, not a good thing to put out there, I don't think.
Right, but I think he was so excited about working with a really team of people to kind of advance how we were going to use it in the United States. So he was involved, but not the way that...
Overspoke.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so Tim Berners-Lee had been tinkering with personal databases of people and software models at CERN since 1980. He built the Hypertext Transfer Protocol, which we know as HTTP. The HTML is the Hypertext Markup Language, or the URL that we're familiar using with when we're looking up stuff. The UNIFORM stands for the Uniform Resource Identifier. It's the first web browser and server and the first web pages. So the internet was first connected in 1969. So that's what we were thinking about earlier in our conversation, right? Like, yep. Really? Just 1991? I mean, what were we doing before that? The internet is the network that carries the information between the nodes. The World Wide Web is the space on the network where information like web pages and documents are stored. So people were using the internet, but they were using it in a very limited form.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, because it seemed like I remembered it existing before I graduated from college, but it must have been just in its infancy.
Yeah, and I remember it because no one had a web page in 1992 when I started my business. I mean, it was much later. I remember I was kind of in the development of a web.
Yeah, I remember living in the dorm, and my roommate, he was very much a computer type person, and he, I know he would get on the modem on our phone in the dorm, get online, you know, with the, you know, the
oh
the
yeah
dial tone,
yeah, that's right,
and,
yeah,
fashion modems, and
yeah, and you'd wait and wait and wait,
yep,
and the big honking machines. I mean, they were huge. But I just remember playing Ms. Pac-Man.
Oh yep,
yeah,
my wife's favorite video game.
Oh really? Yep. Of all time.
Yep.
Yeah. So even then, yeah, that's when games were starting to be established as well. Well, that little tidbit of anniversary also then brought me to an article in the Wall Street Journal by Steve Case. And he's talking about he wrote this in April. But this fits with kind of celebrating the 25th anniversary of the World Wide Web and how we're changing our usage of it. So he writes, his article is called The Next Wave in the Internet's Evolution. And he's talking about we're in a political season. It's been very volatile. We're enmeshed in all the things we don't want to hear about all the time on the news regarding different conversations between the candidates. But he was writing that at the presidential candidate, as it shifts toward, you know, our upcoming elections in November, that voters will hear divergent plans to address the problems. And his first example is the too big to fail. So the financial institutions. And he feels like the real threat to Wall Street, however, doesn't come from politicians, but from startups that are disrupting financial services at an unprecedented pace. Do you feel more stress than you ever have in your life in these times right now?
I feel stress. I don't know. I don't think I feel any more stress than you did when you became
a partner in the 90s?
I think there's definitely more stress in being a partner or an owner of a business.
Yeah.
Versus just being an employee of a business. There's a lot more responsibility, a lot more, you know, financial responsibility, a lot more requirement to keep clients, find new clients, manage staff, do everything else that's involved. A lot more responsibility. So certainly at any time there's going to be some stresses. And
yeah.
I think definitely the last several years have been stressful, I think, for most businesses. And mm-hmm. for small businesses, it's been a tough battle, I think, for the small business versus kind of the large businesses that are out there. It's very difficult to compete for many of the smaller retailers, for example.
Well, when the World Wide Web came out, I mean, that was part of what the first wave of technology was about, is that it leveled the playing field.
Yeah.
But as time is going on, I'm just seeing like everybody's in the field.
Yeah, it's true. It's opened up. It's done two things. You know, one is opened up where anyone can find a customer anywhere around the world, right?
Yeah.
So you could be operating a business in Minnesota, but you could be dealing with customers all around the world.
Yeah.
The other side of it, though, the other side of that coin, though, it's also where previously you were just competing with other businesses in, say, Minnesota or your local community for customers. Now there's competition all over the place from all those different areas as well.
Yeah. So how are you experiencing it with your firm? Like everybody has access to picking an accountant. Visiting an accountant isn't as important now. Like we used to have, you know, regular meetings.
Right. Yeah, I'm still
face to face.
I'm still someone that appreciates a face to face meeting. But you're correct. It's less required. It's so easy just to send information, by email, mm-hmm. or uploading on a secure file transfer system, let's say.
Yeah.
Easy to just get on the phone and talk. Easy to email information back and forth. Yeah, a lot of the traditional face-to-face conversations that we used to have declined. But I miss those. I think that's still a higher quality of interaction with mm-hmm. a client.
Yeah.
Where you can really sense a person's emotions, see what they're feeling, respond. A lot of times, you know, with email conversation, a lot of that emotion is lost, or a lot of the context of what you're saying can be, there can be some miscommunication there.
Sure.
The tone of the conversation is difficult to read when you're just reading text.
Yeah.
Even on the phone, I think, you know, a lot of emotions come through on a phone call, but still I think it's a little bit hidden. You don't see the verbal cues that you see in a face-to-face meeting.
Yeah.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but being a real introvert is really who I am and how I got started in being an accountant. But I really, you know, the favorite part of my job is a face-to-face meeting with a client. I love to meet with clients that I know well and learn more about what's going on or what questions they have, how I can help them.
Yeah.
But also it's one of my greatest joys is to meet a new prospect and learn about what they are trying to accomplish and what questions and things they have. I enjoy helping them with their problems, but also just learning about what they're doing. That's the most interesting part of our job.
Yeah, exactly. Great. Well, I was going to talk a little bit too about, like I started with this article, and there's three different waves, kind of what's coming up with the internet. And so why don't I just bring that back into our conversation, and we'll just see where it leads.
Yep.
And then myself, Mike Cabea, our sound engineer, and our listeners would also like to know more about your background too. And so we'll bring it back into that.
Okay.
Okay. Or back around to you. All right. So anyways, in this article, The Next Wave in the Internet's Evolution, Steve Case talks about the first wave of the internet was about the internet. Companies such as AOL created the underlying infrastructure and brought America and the rest of the world online. This phase peaked around 2000, setting the stage for the second wave, which has been about building apps and services on the top of the internet. Now, the third wave has begun over the next decade and beyond. The internet will rapidly become ubiquitous, integrated into our everyday lives, often in invisible ways. So this will challenge industries such as healthcare, education, financial services, energy, and transportation, which collectively represent more than half of the U.S. economy. So take education. While the presidential candidates discussed the merits of abolishing or expanding the federal education department, entrepreneurs are revolutionizing how instructors teach and students learn. Venture capitalists see what's coming. Have you ever seen Shark Tank?
Yes.
And so there's four investors, and they listen to an entrepreneur, and they're at all different stages of growth in their business venture. And the venture capitalists all have different levels of interest. And so they decide whether or not they want to invest in. And they change things up a lot. But I thought that show has kind of opened up the eyes to see how venture capital works.
Yep. Yep. Nope. I think that is an interesting way for people to kind of see that at its roots.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, exactly. And how you have to kind of fight for what you believe in. And it's never all about the money, although the money is what makes it work.
Right. Yeah, you got to get... You got to get someone excited about your idea, and you have to be passionate about what you do.
Yeah.
And you need to convince someone that they should be interested and that it's worth the risk.
Yeah, exactly. So venture capitalists, like we're saying, they're the ones who are seeing what's coming, and funding for ed tech startups, as Steve Case mentioned in his article, hit $1.85 billion last year, according to EdSurge, up from $360 million in 2010. Former teachers are leading companies that are unleashing, finally, personalized and adaptive learning. While the pundits debate education policy, the innovators are in the trenches, improving classrooms all across the country. Or look at healthcare. As the candidates pitch plans to abolish or build on the Affordable Care Act, the real action to improve America's medical system is coming from entrepreneurs. They are inventing better ways to keep us healthy and smarter ways to treat us when we get sick. The revolution in healthcare is being led by innovators who are working tirelessly to improve outcomes, enhance convenience, and lower costs. And again, investors sense this. Last year, healthcare companies raised a record $16.1 billion in venture capital. The Wall Street Journal reported an increase from 2014 of 34%. And he's saying also, and I'm noticing too, that, and you are probably too, that work itself is changing. Politicians promise to boost job creation, but their debates seem out of step with reality. As more industries become Uberized, an increasing share of employees will work multiple gigs. That they are working someplace as they're developing their idea, which we've seen that always happen, right? You got to figure out when you leap. So yep. You've got this, you got to, it's all about cash flow. You got to flow the cash to make the job work and to make your life work. And so you figure out which job will provide a steady income that I can kind of bank on every couple weeks, get a paycheck. And then as I'm launching my venture, what are some other things that I can be doing to bring in cash? Are you noticing a difference in that? I know you work with a lot of business owners.
Yep.
Are they seeing that with their employees?
I'm not sure. I guess I'm not sure if they're seeing it with their employees, but yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I mean, that is what someone has to do is usually hold down kind of a regular paying job while you're developing that idea.
Yeah.
Kind of moonlighting. In a sense, till it's ready, where it builds to a level where you're able to maybe then quit that regular job and take on your new job.
Well, it always seems to me I see people needing to leap because they can't. It takes so much time.
Yeah, there's only so many hours in a day, so it's difficult to. Yeah, to work a full-time job and then work a second full-time job.
Yeah, and you're planning and you're trying to, you know, build something that is valuable for the customers, and there's a lot of stuff that needs to happen before it gets to the customer.
And you need a fresh mind, and if you're tired and worn out, it's difficult to have much enthusiasm.
Yeah, especially over a long time. Yeah. So in this article, The Next Wave in the Internet's Evolution, Steve continues talking about a full-time job with a single employer could become passé. I don't know about that, but you know, let's go with them. Thus, how we manage benefits, sick leave, and vacation will need to be modernized. That is likely the only path to lifting up the increasingly frustrated middle class. So he says that the second wave startups have been centered around software. Build an app, do what you can to drive viral adoption, and then find a way to make money, usually by selling ads, but sometimes by selling the entire company. In the third wave, this approach won't work as well. So in the third wave, innovators will need to learn the lessons of the first wave, the importance of partnerships, policy, and perseverance. They won't be able to go it alone. They'll need to go together. They'll need to engage with governments as regulators and often as customers. And they'll need to recognize that revolutions often happen in evolutionary ways. Success will require many alliances, as well as constructive dialogue with regulators. The third wave of the internet is also converging with trends toward regional entrepreneurship and impact investing. The State Science and Technology Institute reports that more than 3/4 of venture capital investments last year went to 3 states, none of which were Minnesota. It was California, Massachusetts, and New York. But now we're seeing the rise of the rest. So cities across America are differentiating themselves by supporting startups. The next transformative enterprise is in food systems, could come from the Midwest, and instead of always coming from Silicon Valley, which would impact investing, and focuses on purpose as well as profits in growing too. So investors, customers, and employees increasingly want to believe in the companies that they buy from or work for. Politicians and corporate executives should be mindful that the tectonic plates of our economy are starting to shift. They should engage entrepreneurs and seek win-win partnerships instead of simply watching them with skepticism, or worse, trying to hobble them with regulations. As in the first wave, coopetition is blending competition and cooperation will likely define the coming era. So the world is changing for all of us. And he's just saying that that's what the new playbook is, that we need really to go back to kind of the first wave and really take a look at how we can be cooperative and competitive at the same time by working more together instead of, you know, such divisiveness that we see within the Republican and Democratic parties. That's got to shift.
That's different. And I think that is a difficult concept to really get your head around too, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Competing.
Yeah.
And cooperating at the same time.
Right. Yeah. So in hockey, that wouldn't work.
It wouldn't, but in a sense it does. I mean, you need to
cooperate within the team.
Within the team. I mean, I think you're still competing maybe against each other in some ways, but I think you can do it in a positive manner and push each other to get better.
And the cooperation might even be like with the rules, right? Where everybody's playing by the same rules.
That's important. Yeah, for sure. The rules need to be the same for everyone. Otherwise, there's a unfair advantage to someone.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I can't believe it. We're at the end of our first session. So are you ready for a second one? Because I'm sure the listeners will want to know more about you and your background, and you've got some other stuff you want to share with us.
That would be great.
Okay. I promise I won't be talking quite as much. We're going to be listening more of what you have to say. But I just felt like with the 25th anniversary of the internet and when you started with Mosnick Bauer and Associates and kind of this article that I read in April that I hung on to that was talking about the different waves of the internet and the direction we're going, I just felt like it kind of fit.
Yeah, very timely topic, I think. Very important concept. And I thought that was a very interesting article.
Great. All right. Thanks, Mike Barrett, for this interview and mentoring session. Thanks, Mike Bea, our sound engineer and photographer. Well, thank you for listening, audience. And if you'd like to make a free will donation, I would just really love it. I want to continue bringing good programming to you. Our address is at the bottom of each email that you receive for our program. And also continue sending in what you would like to hear more of. I would love to hear from you, and we'll take that into account, and I'll pull someone in here that can give us the expertise that you would like to hear about. All right, so I'm out for now. We'll see you next week. Have a good week.